Hello and welcome to the very first official Palace Pod. I'm Chris Grierson, presenter at Palace TV, which you can watch on eagles.cbfc.co.uk, on the official Crystal Palace app and the CBFC YouTube channel. As for this podcast, during the season we'll be putting together press conferences, player interviews and other exclusives, all in one place for you to listen wherever you may be. We also thought it would be a great opportunity for you to hear the full chats that we record when we make big features. So often, great stories end up in the edit room recycle bin because we have to chop down over an hour of conversation into about 10 to 15 minutes. But now we have a way for them to make their way into your ears. And first up, it's John Bostock, a player who has massively divided opinion amongst Palace fans. He came through the Palace Academy, was our youngest ever player at 15, but left for Spurs at 16. The chairman at the time, Simon Jordan, was very vocal in the press at how disappointed he was and how that he felt that John and his dad had kind of led them up the garden path and then left for the money. And until this interview, John hadn't really got his side of the story across. I've done quite a few cult heroes features for Palace, but really wanted to look at players or staff who left the club in non-heroic circumstances, a kind of redemption series. So first up, I sent John Bostock a DM on Instagram from the club's account back in January 2018, when he was still at Lens in France. Wasn't hugely optimistic about hearing back, but to our surprise, he messaged back straight away and said he'd absolutely love to do it. I thought I was going to get a nice little trip away to France at that point, but it was put on hold when he moved to Bursaspor in Turkey at the end of January. But when I saw on Instagram again in June that he was back in South London for the summer, I touched base and asked if he fancied coming down to Sellers for a morning to film the feature. And what we captured was better than any of us could have hoped for. This first and longest part of the chat took place in the fan zone outside the stadium in the blazing June sunshine. Here it is.
So I grew up. I was born in St Thomas' Hospital, just south of the river. And I grew up in West Norwood. Uffington Road is my first house. It's not far from maybe 10 minutes drive. Grew up with my three sisters, mum and dad. And yeah, just a normal South London boy with just a passion to play football. From a very young age, football was always a thing that I wanted to do. And yeah, that just embedded into every single part of my life. But I was just a happy kid with just a ball under his arm, you know. And so that's my earliest memories were, yeah, growing up in South London.
And support-wise, Palace family?
Yes, yeah. So my dad had been a season ticket holder. And then from the age of five, I came to my first game, got my first season ticket up in the upper weight stand. And yeah, it was just be at the same seat every season. After that, up until when I was 15, so yeah, I was had every kit, home and away, with my name, it was actually John on the back. It wasn't even Bostock, it was John at my age, so every age I was, I used to get my age on the back. So even the keeper kits with the gloves and all sorts. So yeah, grew up with Palace crazy.
And can you remember what players you used to watch around that time?
Yeah, so I think I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about what players were the ones that really stood out. And for me, I remember in the early days, Sasa Cercic.
Yeah.
Maverick, he used to come off the bench and just cause mayhem. But the one I really probably looked up to in my earliest memories was Attilio Lombardo. Just you just brought something different to the game. He's just calm, creative, and just you're just like another level, really. So, yeah, he was probably the one that stood out. Also, Dougie Freeman, because he was like Mr. Palace, and then obviously having a chance to play with him after watching him for so many years also was a huge honour.
He's so good, wasn't he?
Freeman. You know, yeah, he really
like
was.
Bergkamp in the championship.
He really, really was. I think he was underrated, you know, because you look at his at the way he played and the way he had an effect on the game. Also, how he carried himself behind the scenes. He, his touch was a joke as well. So. Dougie was top.
And how did you first get involved playing for Palace?
So my dad used to coach tennis up in Sutton, and behind where the tennis courts were, he had loads of kids playing football. And we went over after the sessions to go see what all the noise was, and there was maybe like 200 kids trialling for Palace. So he went over to the coach, he said, look, my boy loves football, he's not bad, can he come and trial? The guy said, yeah, of course, just bring him, do the paperwork and come. And then as my dad was walking away, the guy said, okay, well, I forgot to ask you his age. How old is he? My dad said, he's six. He said, oh, no, he's too young. He's under eight, so he's got to at least be seven or eight. And my dad like begged him, said, please, can I just bring him? I think he's good enough. But they said, no, honestly, we can't. You know, if you make a section for one, we've got to do it for others. So my dad was walking off because the coach said, okay, just bring him and we'll have a look. So the next week I came, and after, I think, a three-week trial, there was two of us that signed for Palace out of 200. So that was how I got involved in the academy.
So was your dad quite a, was he the guy that always took his training? Was he a big part of your youth?
He was, and my mum also. I think any parent of a young kid in the academy will tell you the sacrifices that they have to make. Tuesdays, Thursdays training, Saturday training in the morning, Sunday game. And I don't know what it's like now, but so if we played Norwich, maybe we'd have to drive to Norwich or Southampton, they would make the drive down there and I'd drive in the car, I'd be in the car with them. So they'd trek all over the country, you know, supporting me. And so I've got, huge gratitude for them backing me in the early days.
And what coaches do you remember around that time? Who stands out for you as a decent coach?
So I remember my first coach, his name was David Njai. And I think my debut for Palace or in the academy, I was six or seven and I scored a volley against Millwall. So that was a good way to start my career at the club. But then growing up, some really good coaches. But the ones that really stood out to me were Mickey Hazard, who obviously played the game at the highest level, was a midfielder, very creative, and he really helped me to see the game differently. Also, Gary Izzet. Working with him with the 18s, gave me a big push, taught me up stuff offside, outside of the pitch as well, you know, professionalism, mindset, what it takes to kind of go to the next level. And so those are the two I'd really say stood out.
Sure, we'll get on to Mickey Hazard later. What age were you when he coached you?
I was with Mickey from the 13s to the 16s, 13s to 15s, I think that was the age I was with him, yeah.
And so at the age of 15, you made your debut for the first team.
Yeah.
Can you just talk us through how that came about?
Yeah, so I think I started training with the first team under Peter Taylor. He called me up to just train with the first team. I think I was 14 the first time I trained with the first team. And it was crazy, but it felt natural because I felt like, you know, I've been at the club since I was young and it was always been my dream to play for the first team young. So when I got the call up to train with the first team, I wanted to seize the opportunity. Training with the first team off and on for a while. And then I got day release, so I got permission to leave my school a couple of days a week to come and train with the first team. So that was in my last year of school. And then had a phone call. My dad called me. He said, I got home from school actually. He said, John, had a phone call from Palace. Neil Warnock wants you involved in the game tonight. I was like, tonight? Wow, okay, what do I do? So I tried to have a nap. I don't know why. I tried to have a little siesta. I tried to have a little rest. Obviously couldn't rest because this is maybe a dream is going to come true. Then I came to the stadium and I think I actually wasn't allowed to be in the first team dressing room legally because I was 15 and underage. But we did anyway. I was with the boys in the dressing room. And it was just, I just tried to soak it all in. You know, it was unbelievable experience, and you go out and you run out on Selhurst on the pitch, and it's just I played a youth team game in the FA Youth Cup prior to that on Selhurst, but it was the second time I ever played on the pitch, and it was just it was unbelievable. And then obviously when you're warming up and then the coach Warnock nods at you and you come over, it was just it's just something dreams are made of. You know, and so I look back on that day with huge emotion and just realization of a dream coming true.
How did you do in the game when you came on?
It was, I did well. I think I had a 25-minute cameo. I think we were 2-0 down or 2-1 down. And I just completely forgot the score and just tried to just enjoy my performance and just tried to just play as if I was playing in under 18s. So I got on the ball quite a bit. A few no-look passes, I remember. A couple of tackles. I remember one tackle I had against Joby McEnough because it was against Watford and he was at Palace before, so I knew him. And I smashed him in the 50-50, which was nice. I had a free kick and I just got involved in the game. It was just that naivety, you just want to just play and enjoy it and just soak it all in, and not to know my family were there watching as well. It was, a great memory.
Looking back at the footage, you don't look 15.
Mm-hmm.
Did the fact that you were quite big and mm-hmm. strong for your age, you think that helped a lot?
For sure it helped. But I wasn't the biggest in my age group. But I had strong legs, I was quite powerful for my age. And when you're fearless, you don't look your age. And so, I think I surprised quite a few, even on my teammates, when I told them how old I was. I remember playing a keep ball with Ben Watson and a couple of other guys. And they're like, you're born in 92. Oh my, and they felt so old because I told them my age. And so now I'm getting a little bit older. It's roles have reversed. Now I'm training with other youngsters and they're telling me they're born in 2000. It's like, wow, I know how Ben Watson feels. I always use that as a reference. So but I guess my size did help a little bit.
And just going back a bit, training with the first team at 14, that's really rare.
Yeah.
Were you aware at the time that's quite a rare thing?
I was always pushed up. So even for England, I was playing for the 16s when I was 14. I was always pushed up from early in Palace. I don't know if it happened because originally I told them I was too young to join the academy. So they signed me. I went straight into the under eights. So I was on our six. So that kind of just continued. I think that was 1 year, maybe under 12s, when I stayed in my age group. After that, it was always playing up. And so I think I played for the first team before I played for the reserves. So it wasn't normal. It wasn't a normal case. So, but that was my reality. So I didn't have anything else to go by. So for me, it was normal.
What players were in the youth team with you around your age group?
So yeah, we had a lot of good young players coming through. There was Victor Moses, Scannell, Nathan Klein. And so those are the kind of players that were coming through. So we had a really strong youth team. And so we all pushed each other on.
Was Wilf around at that time?
You know, it's I didn't even train with Wilf. He was spoken about in the academy. There's another coach that really helped me in my career. His name was Colin. I can't remember his surname, Colin. And he always said, like, watch out for this kid. He's got unbelievable feet. And I watched him train a little bit. And you could just see that the way he manipulated the ball, it was different, you know. And so I never trained with him, and he never played the same age group as me. I think he's a 93 or 90, yeah. 93, but I was playing always up, even though I'm a 92. So, yeah, I never had a chance to play with him.
So going forward again, you played against Watford, came on as sub, and then you started a game mm-hmm. against Cardiff,
yeah.
Was it? Was that pretty soon after?
Yeah, I think it was either a week after or 2 weeks after. Again, another school night, and we had Cardiff away, and I'm starting the game, and I'm looking around the pitch, and as I'm seeing Robbie Fowler and Jimmy Ford Hasselbank, I'm thinking, wow, these guys are legends in the game, and I'm playing, starting against them in Ninian Park, and it was a great experience. You know, you just soak it all in, and you just try to do your best, and starting in midfield, I think it might have been Sean Derry in midfield. And so, yeah, great memories. And obviously I went on to play under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank at Antwerp, so nice link there.
And around that time, we read about how you had interest from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. When did that happen, the interest from other clubs in Europe?
I think around the same age, so 14, 15, that was when Barcelona made their interest. They actually offered me a contract to go and sign there for several years, which is obviously very attractive. But we didn't think it would be in our best interest. That was quite, obviously, because growing up in England, you just think about football in England. You appreciate the clubs abroad, but you don't think that's ever be an option. So when that came, it was like, wow, you know, something that you really want to consider. But my family kind of thought it would be best for me to stay in London.
And then I guess at Palace, you played, was it four appearances in the first team?
I think four.
According to Wikipedia.
Yeah, four or five. I think four or five. One was FA Cup, yeah.
So at what point did they try and start negotiating with you to try and tie you down to a professional deal?
It was, so I was coming to the end of my, so it would have been my last year in school. So I'd have been due to sign scholar terms. And so there was always talks going on with the club. And I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay at the club. I wanted to stay. Obviously, there's other factors that come in, agents and other people's advice and stuff, and maybe the people who were managing me at the time weren't happy with the offer that Palace gave, and so they kind of pushed me to another option. And so, but yeah, it was always my desire to stay at the club.
Yeah, what did Palace do to try and, because the story goes that, you know, Simon wined and dined you and your dad, and it looked like you were going to sign for Palace, and at the last minute you changed your mind and went to Spurs. What really happened?
Yeah, so it was always, so Palace always made it clear that they wanted to, you know, keep me at the club, and for me to go on to be a first team regular and really make my place in centre midfield in this club. And then that was my plan also. And then they said everything, and when it came time at the end to actually offer the contract, I think people in control of my decisions at the time weren't satisfied with it. And obviously the offers from elsewhere were more attractive. And so that was when, at the end, when the finances were spoke about and the contract was actually given, the plan and stuff, it was like, okay, well, you're not really backing up what you said in the first place. So, you know, my agent at the time and people who were making decisions, because I was just a kid, 15-year-old, all I want to do is play football. You don't really have that much say. You know, you don't really have that much say. And so you kind of trust the people who make decisions for you in faith that it's the best decision. And so that's how it kind of came about, really. So I guess it kind of may look like there was a change of mind, but maybe there was just a disappointment of the offer and then a persuasion of other interests.
Yeah, you obviously know there's a negative reaction from the fans, but because of you being a Palace fan,
sure.
I guess they felt like, how can someone who's a Palace fan choose to go to Spurs? And the other people that got, would you say, I'm going to say, got the blame, but this is in fans' eyes.
Yeah,
it's your dad and Mickey Hazard.
Yeah,
because Mickey Hazard used to play for Spurs.
Yeah,
so it must have been him that convinced you to go there. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, Mickey didn't really have anything to do with Spurs. Obviously, it looks like it would have made sense, but he didn't. It was, look, I had, to be honest, I could have chosen any club in England, but the Spurs came hard, really hard with the interest, and put pressure on my parents, put pressure on my agent for a deadline to sign. And so when Palace didn't quite match up to what my managers, you could say my agent, my parents, kind of what they thought I was going to get from Palace in terms of a contract, Spurs put the pressure. And so it was... it happened so fast. I remember I came in from school and I was told, you know, you've got to sign this contract. I was like, wow, now, like, really? Are you sure it's the best thing? And, you know, everybody around me said, you know, this is the right thing for you. And when you're, I was big for my age, I'm probably quite mature for my age, but you don't know really what's best. You know, all I knew was Palace.
You're not even worried about money at that age.
You're not worried about money. I was just worried about trying to play first team football, and trying to represent my country under 17, under 18 level. That's all you worry about. But obviously, other people worry, other people think, everybody's got an opinion. And so, now I'm a little bit older, I can make decisions for myself. It's you learn from those situations and to really fight for what you want.
Yeah, do you wish that you'd fought more for what you wanted then?
100%, 100%. Was leaving Palace the best decision for my football career? I do not believe that it was. Have I developed and used that whole situation to become a better person, a stronger character? 100%. I've had to. I learned a lot about myself, my character, and I've been on an emotional roller coaster. I appreciate what I've gone through, but if I could have made another decision for myself, I would have 100%.
Let's talk about Simon Jordan for a little bit.
Yeah.
Did it hurt? The things that he said in the press after all this happened, like saying that he was going to take back yours and your dad's season ticket.
He did. Yeah, honestly, we've not been back since, and it hurts because I'm a South London boy, so obviously I've played abroad and I've gone, but when I come home, it's like I'm local, you know, so the club is embedded in South London culture, so everywhere I go, you see the club, and I follow the club. I'm so passionate about the club. So when the head of the club says stuff about you, it hurts. But I completely understood where he was coming from. As I remember, I left Palace, and even reading some of the forums from fans and stuff.
You know, I received. You went on. You read the.
Yeah,
forums.
Because you're a kid, and you, obviously there was no Instagram. There was no Facebook at the time. I think it was only MySpace. But forums, and so you're curious. You want to know what people say about you. I wouldn't advise a young me to do it now, but you look because you care. If I didn't care, I wouldn't have looked. But I cared. I'm like, what the fans saying? And it was abusive stuff. You know, I received death threats and stuff. But I was never bitter. I was never like, oh, Palace fans, why? You know. I was never critical. I understood because I was a Palace fan. I understood how they felt. I just couldn't fix it. I couldn't. Change what was done, and so I've only had good words to say about Simon Jordan. I will never be bitter towards anybody if something bad to say about me. Is it true? No. About my character, it was a decision made, but it doesn't define my character. And so I understand how the fans felt and how Simon Jordan must have felt at the time.
Did it affect your relationship with your dad at all?
At the time, no. Over time, probably yes. But we're really close. Our relationship is much more than football. And so at the time, look, I'm a father now. My son's only 2.5. And you really only want to do what you think is best for your child. You don't do something that you think is going to cause your child harm. And my dad, you know, he alongside of my agent and my family, They made the choice what they probably thought was best at the time. Was it the wise decision? Probably not. But you know, that's what they thought was best. And I appreciate that. You know, we've always been close. And you know, I guess it hurts that you can't watch me play locally. And I'm playing away now, and you can't come to watch me play the week, because he was there for every training session, every game. You know, every meeting we had, he's been there for it all. So yeah, but we're close now. But yeah, you are tempted to think, oh, well, why? You know, why did you make that decision? But it's because he thought it was the best, simply thought it was the best thing at the time.
So he doesn't come back anymore?
No, he doesn't come back. He doesn't come back. And also, I think one of the things that made the decision was, aided in making the decision was, there was a member of staff at the time who said, the way you play, you'll never play in this team. And I remember it clearly. He was, he wasn't the manager, but let's just say he was very close to the manager. And he said, you know, the way you play, you'll never play in this team. You know, my flamboyant style, if you want to call it that, or creative style. You know, you don't do the other side of the game enough and stuff. And he said it to me clearly. I went home and told my dad that. He was like, okay, let's be sure before you commit your future to this club that the people making decisions are backing you. So that was like another question mark that he had, and brought up some questions. And so obviously when other interests came, it kind of made sense for him at the time. So yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Cool. And how, talking about the way you play,
yeah,
the way you played then, describe what you were like as a player at that point. What kind of player were you?
Always trying to get on the ball. Always trying to play the killer pass. Not always, but that was my game. That was how I tried to affect the game, by making assists, trying to get on the score sheet, and just trying to use my abilities to try and hurt the opposition. Always confident in my defensive part of the game also. But yeah, it's loads of room for improvement. I'm still a kid trying to make it in the men's game. And so as much as confident as I was in my abilities, I realised I had a lot of work to do to try and improve my weaknesses.
So then you moved to Spurs,
mm-hmm.
under Juan de Ramos,
yes,
at the time.
Yes.
Did you train much with the first team when you first went there?
So when I went there, I was told I would be training with the first team, involved with the first team, playing games with the reserves. And so, yeah, I went there, I was training with the first team, went on pre-season tour, played well, involved doing well. Then I came back, I played some games for the reserves, and I think I scored like 8-8. I was surprised at my form. I was like, wow, I'm not really this prolific in front of goal normally. But from centre midfield, I guess my confidence coming from Palace to Spurs, I felt really confident. And then Juan de Ramos got sacked. And shortly after, Damien Camoli was the guy, the sport director who brought me in. He lost his job. And so everybody who came in, it was a complete new system. Redknapp came in. I actually made my debut under him, I think it was in November.
UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
Dynamo
Zagreb. So that was in the same year I came. And yeah, it all seemed to be going to plan. Then after that, the club decided that it would be my best interest to go back and train with the under-18s and play with the under-18s for a bit. And that hit me for six, honestly, because I was playing under-18 since I was 14 at Palace. And I felt like I'd, you know, proved myself at that level. I felt like I proved myself at that level. And so, and to go back at 16, 17, it was like, it was a huge mental challenge. And I found it very difficult because people were expecting you to be the finished article. Okay, well, he's played in the first team, come back to the under-18s. Like, he must be the wonder kid. And I felt like I had to prove myself in every game in the under-18s and really be the perfect player. And so when you go into a pitch thinking like that, it brings pressures and a mindset that is not healthy for an athlete. So that was tough. So yeah, there was a change in the guard with the manager's stuff shortly after I came.
What was your attitude like when you played the under-18s then? Because everyone always presumes when you have a young player that does well and then doesn't do well and goes in the under-18s, that it's always attitude problem.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're a nice guy.
This has been the issue. I think people think, well, if it didn't work, then there has to have been an attitude problem.
Yeah.
If I'm completely honest with you, it was just confidence. You could ask any manager I've played for, any friend or family member that I'm around. I would never be big-headed or anything, but my character's never been in question. Maybe in time, maybe I've probably been too much the other way, you know, focused too much, been too professional in terms of my, okay, I've got to eat well, I've got to sleep well, why am I not playing well, I've got to, okay, let me study all my clips, let me, and when you think too much, you put more pressure on yourself. But I felt like I was carrying this weight of wonder kid. I've got to prove myself, I've got to show myself, you know, why they've invested this money, why there's this whole kerfuffle around my name. So when you start thinking like that, you start carrying unnecessary pressure. And so you start to feel yourself kind of go in, you know, downward spiral, and your confidence starts to go down. You start to question, well, am I really a good player? Why can't I perform? Why am I not shining? Why am I not, you know, proving to everyone I'm this kid? Then you start questioning yourself, well, am I really a good player? Okay, well, did Spurs make a mistake in signing me? Okay, well, I should have said Palace. And then you just start, and all this stuff, and then you go out on loan. And I went out on loan to Brentford, it was my first club, and I played on the right wing. I've never played right wing in my life. The manager was under pressure to keep his job. And
he scored twice at debut, though.
He scored twice,
so yeah. Again.
Exactly, yeah. Expectation. But then there's a clause in my contract from Spurs. If he doesn't play in three games straight, he can come back, because it's better for him to train in our system than to train at Brentford. And so the manager, Andy Scott, was under pressure to keep his job. Lost a couple on the bounce, so he went with experience. So I found myself out of the team. And then so Spurs said, okay, we'll come back to Spurs, train with us. And then that was put in the media, must have been Bostock's attitude. Now he's back at Spurs. Yeah, sometimes when you're painted one time with the brush, that kind of paint sticks. So I've been working hard to try and erase that paint on my journey since.
Hull on loan as well, another great start.
Yeah.
With that wonder goal.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd that feel?
So that was my first, so I was a championship. And then prior to signing for Hull, I had a choice, Swansea and Hull. And then Hull kind of really put the interest and said, you know, we really want you to come play on loan. And Swansea were like, okay, well, you're not really sure. So my debut was against Swansea. And then got the ball from Nobby Solano. Took a Cruyff turn in the middle of the pitch. And I remembered thinking, it's nearly half time. I haven't had enough shots yet. Let me just have a shot next time I get it. So I just created the room, let it hit the ball perfectly, and just, yeah, went top corner from like 40 yards. So that was a nice way to start my loan at Hull.
How did that loan end?
That loan ended, pretty much the same thing. I started off really well, and the same thing happened. I had the clause in my contract where if I hadn't played in three or four games, I could come back to Spurs. because they really wanted to make sure that they oversaw my development at the time. The club were struggling, started off really well, struggled, so they weren't of experience. I think I was playing number 10 position there. So I hadn't really played centre midfield anywhere. And then I found myself out of the team, so Spurs said, okay, just come back and train with us so we can, you know, develop you, work on your game. Because if you're not playing, you might as well come back and we'll work on you. So that's how kind of the same thing worked.
But when you look at that on Wikipedia, it looks like Brentford, loan ended early.
Yeah.
Hull, Spurs called him back from the loan.
Yeah.
You're right. It's like if you just look it down without the context of the fact that they struggled and went for experience.
Yeah. Because you have to remember, I was 17 when I went on loan to these two clubs. So I'm still learning my game and I'm being brought into a club to, you know, show, let's say, a bit of class. But then I'm being played out of position. You're still learning, you're still adapting to moving up north or going to a new place. And so there's so many different effects. There's so many different, so many different factors. And so, when you hear a story or a tabloid or an article without the context, it's very easy to paint a different picture to what is actually true.
So then there's Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then Swindon.
Yeah.
Under Di Canio.
Yeah. I'm very glad I played under Di Canio because I've never experienced anything like it since. I don't think I will experience anything like that again. But I know if I can play under him, I can play under anyone because he just brought a completely different outlook on football and just professionalism and just intensity. So that was an interesting experience. Actually, the first time I played a few games in centre midfield, which was enjoyable finally.
And then January 2013, so at this point you've been at Spurs 3.5 years?
Yeah.
What are you feeling at that point about how it's going for you?
I felt like, well, I'm really going to get a chance. They're bringing more bodies in my position. There's nearly 5 or 6 full internationals, 17, 18, 19. I'm not really going to get a look in. So you're looking elsewhere, you're thinking, okay, is it time to move permanent or go on another loan? And the thing with loans is you're searching for a footballing home, you just can't find it. You know, and you just, now I look back, I'm very grateful because I learned a lot about myself. You pick up different things, you come around different professionals and you learn, you're like a sponge. So I see that as my internship, you know. So I really try to get as much knowledge and learn as much as I could. But it's not a home, it's not a base. You're not playing knowing, okay, I'm here next season, I'm here for the next few months. I know I'm going to, you know, get some roots here. You come and leave, and when the club bring you on loan, they don't treat you always the same as a player who belongs to the club. So I'm thinking, okay, is it another loan, or can I leave? So you're not sure what's going to happen next. That's kind of how it was at that time.
And then came your first move abroad, Toronto, FC. And what was the original plan with that, just a few months?
Yeah, so I actually went out and trained with San Jose Earthquakes. And then they really wanted to do the loan, but they couldn't agree terms with Spurs. But then Ryan Nelson, the centre-back, played most of his career at Blackburn. Then he kind of finished his career at Spurs. He took the managerial job at Toronto. He said, look, I'd train with John. I'd love him to come and play for us. So I went to Toronto, which was a really interesting experience, playing in the MLS. And I was there for 4 months. Again, I was played right wing, number 7 in the back of my shirt. Never played right wing in my life. And I was just knocking the manager's door, please, can I just play centre midfield, please? Like, I just want to prove myself. You know, in training, I'd play in centre midfield, and I thought I'd done really well. But he said, no, I'm going to play on the wing. So after, I think, 11 games or so, I just, you know, I'm not kind of winger to go outside of my right foot and whip it my right. I'm left-footed, and so I tried to come in and get involved in the play, and it didn't suit me. But I learned. I was grateful for the experience, but that's kind of how that panned out.
And you get to the summer, and the contract is up with Spurs, so you're then without a club.
Yeah.
And then in the papers, it's the story.
Yeah.
One former Wonder Kid, John Bostock, is now out of contract
without
a club.
Yeah.
What was the situation with you there?
Tough. It was tough. It was really tough. Because my confidence was rock bottom, really, at that time. I was thinking, I've been on loan to, like, every country, every club there is to go on loan to, and why have I not done well? Why? And I just realised that I just wasn't enjoying football. I wasn't enjoying it because I put so much pressure on myself to perform that kid who just loved to play the game, it wasn't the same kid, it wasn't the same feeling. So I realised that. I was like, you know what? I actually considered thinking, like, you know, I don't know if football's for me anymore. Because when you love something that much and it's not working, it becomes like, the thing that was a blessing feels like a curse. And I was like, just desperate really. I was thinking, wow, I don't know if I can keep going, because when your confidence is knocked as a footballer, nothing else really makes sense. It doesn't really, you don't feel the same. And I remember, obviously I'm a Christian, and I just prayed. I was like, God, you know what, if you want me to come out of this game, like, close the door kind of thing. And I felt specific, like, really strongly, like, no, like, you're not done. You know, you're in this for a specific reason. And so I actually realized, okay, look, I needed a new start. Drop that wonder kid title, drop that pressure, and just play and enjoy the game for what it is. No strings attached. And that's how my move to Antwerp came about.
So that's the story up until when John left England to resurrect his career. Before talking about the next stage of his career, we went for a walk around the stadium to find his old seat in the Arthur Waite stand. And it was emotional.
They had the best seats in the whole stadium. Every year we had to make sure we want to renew them so nobody could steal them. Still a good view. Wow. It's emotional, man. Truth.
Love this stand.
I think it was the flipping that. I think I get this emotional. I believe it was maybe here. These two seats here. Maybe 128, 129, just here, right in the middle.
What's it like being back?
Wow, it's emotional, man. Holding back tears. Because you just think about from 5 to 15, I was sitting here every week in my little bag of sweets, watching the game with my dad. It's just, it's emotional.
What kind of a fan were you?
So, where I used to sit here, there was only old men around me. And that's when, you can't smoke in stadiums now, can you?
No, you couldn't.
They used to smoke so much, and I used to come a little bag of sweets. And obviously, there's no phones then, so you weren't distracted. You're just watching the game in your program. And I would try and start songs. I'd actually stand up and try and start songs and get people to sing, to join in. Just used to watch games and just I used to go down in the warm-up in my program and my pen when players would try and kick their ball or take a bad touch or overkick it when they're warming up. Please give me an autograph. And so when I made my debut, I made sure I came back down over here to sign any kids' autographs, because that's what I used to love to do. I used to come with my stepbrother. We used to sit together and we used to race up and down these stairs, try and get as many signatures as we could. Man, so many memories.
So when you've been back since you left, tell me about the only time.
So the only time I came back was when I was on loan at Hull City. We had an away game at Palace. And I remember just pulling up to the stadium on the team bus and just literally holding back tears. So emotional, because it's like, wow, I'm back home now. But I'm not home, if you know what I mean. And I remember I came into the changing room before the game, and somebody at Palace put out this tactics board with like Palace 11 legends. So like you had Ian Wright, Mark Bright, Lombardo, Dean Gordon, just this team of just legends. Then you had the subs bench. Then you had the kit man. They wrote kit man and bossed up next to the kit man. So somebody had bantered the change room, our change room. So when I came in, all the whole city boys were just cracking up, like, they must hate you here. I was like, nah, it's home now. And so I was desperate to play. I was on the bench. And at half time, we were doing a warm up for the players who weren't playing, obviously. And every time I touched the ball, I got booed. I was like, oh my word. So then I think I took a touch and then just hit one. It went top corner in the warm up, and the fans went silent. I was like, oh, just please, I just want to come on. I want to come on so badly. But I didn't get a chance to come on. I think it was a boring 0-0 draw. I was thinking, just put me on. you never know what could happen. But yeah, it wasn't meant to be. That's the only time I've been back since, so must have been about 18, 19 then. Since then, I'm 26 now, so my first time back in a stadium. So yeah, very emotional.
Can you see yourself coming back here as a fan?
Yeah, for sure. You know, ultimately I want to be based in South London when I retire, so hopefully got another 10 years yet. But I'd love to take my children. My son's 2.5 now, so he'll be a little bit older. But I'd love to be in, to get the same seats. I'd love to be in the same place and to repeat the history of my family so they can come and watch. And it's an unbelievable club to support, especially in my time. The ups and downs were crazy. Obviously, we've been in the Prem for 6 years now, so a bit more stable, but we were always up and down and you didn't know if we were going to win, lose or draw. And it's just, as a fan, an emotional roller coaster. So I would love the same for my son or future children to experience the same thing I did growing up, for sure.
Anyone else got something red and blue in their eye? We'd originally planned to do the last section of interview out on the Holmesdale Road, but after that moment, it felt right to just do it sat there in John's old seat. We pick up the story from when John decided to leave England and start again in Belgium. So, what brought you to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's Royal Antwerp side?
I realised I needed to start again. I needed to find somewhere just to stay and play and just learn the game without any pressure or expectation of Wonder Boy or any stigma along those lines. So I had several offers in England, a couple in other countries in Europe, but Hasselbank just said, look, come and play and just enjoy yourself. And I just needed to hear that. I just needed to hear that you're just going to come and play. So I went to, and it was a big drop, you know, going from Spurs to second division in Belgium. It was like, it didn't make sense to anyone, but to me it did, because I just was going to be a kid again. So he handed me the number 8 shirt, finally got to play centre midfield for a year, and didn't manage, I think I scored one goal, but I got like 22 assists. So I was like, I was actually learning on the job, you know, and so it was like a breath of fresh air playing for Antwerp the first year.
So you had the first year there, and then the second season you moved, didn't you, to another Belgian club,
yep.
OHL?
OHL, yeah. Moved to OHL. So they just came down from the first division, and they had plans to go straight back up. Antwerp's is the oldest club in Belgium, great history, even with the link of Manchester United before. but they had some issues. The club wasn't really in a good place off the pitch. So I need to go somewhere where I can just focus on playing football again, because there were some issues off the field where I was like, oh, come on, guys, you've got to fix this up. So OHL came in. It's a proven club in Belgium. Bit of a yo-yo club, but they had ambition to go straight back up, so I played there. And we just got on like a house on fire, really. We got promoted. I ended up winning the Player of the Season award for the league. And we went up via the playoff, which is always the best way to go up. So it was, two successful first 2 years in Belgium.
What was it like adapting to a new country?
It was, I was familiar with Belgium because one of my best friends is from there. One of my best friends who I met at Spurs, we played together. He's from Saint-Liège, signed for Spurs. Similar story to me. And he went back to Saint-Liège. So I traveled there a bit. And Belgium is like, there's two parts. There's a French part and then there's the Dutch part. And so I've only lived in the Dutch part, so everybody who speaks Dutch speaks English. So that helped. In Antwerp, great city, so everyone speaks English. In OHL, Leuven, they also speak English, obviously as well as Dutch. So it wasn't, the language barrier wasn't too bad. I ended up learning most of the language anyway. And football's football. You know, if it's going well on the pitch, everything else takes care of itself. So takes some adapting to different cliques in the changing room, different philosophy of football, but it suited me and it helped me get a foundation to then build off of.
Did you fully up sticks and move there, or I suppose you can come back quite a lot?
Yeah, so I completely started again, really, literally started again. First time I even went blonde, I was like, you know what, I need to just completely reinvent myself and just do stuff that shows that you're not really who you were, you know, and so. Yeah, my agent was like, what have you done? It's like, nah, new start. So I went blonde, moved all my stuff, like completely just packed bags. Me and my wife on a journey together, and she's been by me from day one. And it's not always been easy. The sacrifices that have got to be made, but it's been worth it.
And what made you want to move to France?
So I had my first season in the first division in Belgium. Had a really good year. Had several offers from bigger clubs in Belgium. Nothing that really sat right. Then Lens came in, and I didn't really want to go to France. I heard of the club, the history there, when it played in Champions League before and stuff. And I thought, okay, out of courtesy, let me just go and see the club. So I went, and I was just like, wow, the stadium. They just finished renovating it. It's where they held some games in the Euros 2016. I believe that's where England played Wales. And so, like, just I was just taken back by, you know, 41,000 stadium, the training ground, everything was just. It was a big club in France. Also, the club, the fans, they're like maybe joint third top fans in France. So I just kind of connected with the whole setup of the club, and I realised, okay, yeah, let's give this club a couple of years. And yeah, another step up on the rebuild.
You mentioned before about how you felt that pressure on you, mm-hmm. weighing you down, and it affected your confidence. At what point did you feel like that had gone, the pressure?
It's a journey. It's a process also. You're not a robot. It's like, okay, pressure's off now. It's a constant reminding yourself, look, you're in this game because you love this game, you know, and God's given you a talent to play this game, not because you're trying to prove anyone wrong or yourself right. And so sometimes, you know, over the years, it will come back up again, but I've learned to deal with it and just focus on playing the game. And confidence comes with playing. So when you're playing and you're enjoying the game and you're actually focusing on what's going on the pitch, not any other influences, it just builds. It builds naturally. And so I've experienced that firsthand, and it's been, it's been a journey.
And you won the league's Player of the Year award mm-hmm. in the first season at Lens. Must have been a great moment.
Yeah, it was a good moment. Because when I signed for Lens, I thought I made a mistake in the first few weeks. I was like, oh, does manager know? Does he know what I'm about? And then after I had a conversation with him, and he gave me a bit more license on the pitch. And the game after that, I took the ball in midfield, turned and just sprayed it through like three defenders. And my friend, teammate went and scored. He said to me after, okay, you got the license to do what you want on the pitch now. So after that, I realised I was in the right place. And the football we played there, we were the best team in the division. We were first and second up until the last two games of the season. And by one point, we missed out on promotion. But we dominated every game. And so we just played great football. And to be a part of that, to help a team get that close and to play attractive football and to, you know, really build something special, to win the Player of the Season award was a nice moment. Because also, like, my wife, she's, you know, the last eight, I've been married nearly so 7.5 years now. And so she's been with me for all the tears, all the emotions. And so for her to actually come to an award ceremony where her husband wins it after all the sacrifices, it was further evidence that the sacrifice we made was worth it.
Must have been lovely when Simon Jordan tweeted you congratulations after that.
I wouldn't really consider that a congratulational a tweet, but I saw the funny side of it, because he still wanted to contact me. But yeah, the comment wasn't really needed. It just brought more attention to him, probably more than me. But as I said before, I'm not bitter towards him. Obviously, he was affected by the whole process of me leaving Palace, and it's still affected now, unfortunately. I can't change that.
Do you get quite a lot of contact from fans in England? I suppose you've got social media now, so yeah. Are you aware of people keeping an eye on your career?
Yeah, I am. A lot of fans and stuff ask when I'm coming back. I've had an interesting, the last few years, it's been interesting, the relationship with Palace fans. It's been a lot better, I guess you could say. A lot of kind comments from Palace fans wishing me the best and, you know, hoping to possibly see me back one day. So that's it's nice, really, really nice. I played for quite a few clubs in England alone and stuff, so also, you know, fans follow your story. So social media is crazy. People that I would never be able to come into contact with message you, so it's I appreciate it. I do appreciate it.
You must have learned so much as a player playing in all the so many different countries. Is it, do you notice a different style of play with each country you go to?
For sure. In England, if a player doesn't do well at a top level club, immediately he thinks let's go down. Championship, League One, League Two, and you look down, whereas there's so many different clubs horizontally, like across the pond, across in France, Belgium, Holland, Italy, all over. And in England, I guess, well, especially in my late teens, there isn't that much room for developing young kids, especially when there's so much at stake. You know, managers, I think the turnaround for managers in England is, I think, is the highest rate compared to any other country. So there's pressure on winning. Of course, there's pressure on winning in every other country, but there's a bit more patience. Especially when I went to Belgium, I can see why the Belgian national team is so strong, because if you're young and you're good enough, they'll just play you. Even if you make mistakes, they'll just continue to play you. And so now you see, for a country with 10 million people, the national team's very, very strong. So no, we've got the talent in England. We have. It's, trust me, we've got more than enough talent in England. It's just opportunity. So going and to be able to experience France, Belgium, Toronto, America, and also Turkey, you learn new football philosophies, new cultures, new mindsets, new tactics. You see the good, the bad, the ugly, you see everything. So I'm a bit more cultured now, I guess, in my understanding.
Do you think we're going to see a lot more English players play abroad? Because we've already seen Sancho at Dortmund. Mm-hmm. Mandela Egbo left Palace and went to Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a lot more?
I think so. I think now you see it's a bit more of a trend, and it's working. It's working as a platform for them to play at a high level and to show themselves. You know, I used to look at players like Colin Kazim Richards and think, oh, he's going everywhere. Like, what is this? Like, he just moves every season, but kind of not following him, but having a similar journey, you realise that I can see why he's made that trip. He's valued abroad. He's got credit abroad. And there is a route to progress and really have a great career. So,
how much of a plan do you have? Because at the moment, it looks like every move you've made since you went to Belgium is a step up. Mm-hmm. Each club, it's like a gradual progression.
Yeah.
Do you have a long-term plan like that in mind, or do you just go to each club, play well, and then see what happens?
Both. I'm relatively young, but I'm old enough to know that in football, you can't really plan anything. When I left England, my idea was to leave, 1 year to play and come back. That was it. Okay, 2 years max just to get games and come back. Somebody's going to take me back in England. Then I realised that I enjoyed it. There was progress and I was improving. And I could see a clear route to how I could, you know, really rebuild. So after, I think this is my sixth year away, like you said, it has been progress. Every year has been a step up. I want to continue doing that, but now I have a young family. Of course, if the right door opened back home, I would really consider it. But I've been happy rebuilding how I've been rebuilding. Uncomfortable, it may be, but progress nonetheless.
Position-wise, on the pitch, you very much an attacking central midfielder now. You take penalties, right?
Yeah, I take pens. I guess I started more offensive. Now I play eight, or in abroad we say six, so the four role, so defensive midfielder, but with a license to create going forward. So using my passing to pick teams apart, pick out passes for runners. I feel very comfortable creating from deep. I'm also bombing on. So I guess if you're going to be a professional footballer and you're going to really make midfield your own, you have to be adept in every single aspect of the game, going forward, defensively, tactically. So I've had to work on those things, and I feel like I've progressed.
Turkish football, mm-hmm, looks mad.
Yeah.
Is it?
It is mad. No, it's it's something beautiful to be a part of. It's not what I expected, but I like to liken it to like the cauldron of football. If you can do well there, in that pressure and that environment of fans, and they just idolise the game. If you're a player there and you do well, you can't walk on the streets. You literally is just, I've not experienced anything like that yet. So I'm enjoying it so far. I've only been there since February, so not long at all. I came last day of the transfer window after 20 or 30 hours after signing, I was playing against Besiktas. So thrown right into the lion's den.
Crocodiles.
What does a crocodile live in?
I don't know. Swamp. Crocodile swamp. So, yeah, it's something I didn't really think, a place where I didn't really think I would play. But it made sense, and it's another step of progression. So I played against some top quality players every week, players I used to watch growing up. So it's so good so far.
We see the ballers in God wristband you got there. How important is your faith to you in your football career? How important has it been to help you?
So I like to liken my life. Who I am, obviously I'm a footballer, but before that I'm a husband. And a father, but before that, I'm a Christian. So that's who I am as a man. My identity is built on my relationship with God. So that's number one to me. Doesn't mean I love anything less, but that's just who I am. So that really feeds into every aspect of my life. My relationship with my wife, my son, my career. Practically, it's helped so much in this journey, because I think if I didn't have a real genuine relationship with God, I probably would have given up a long time ago, because I probably experienced an unnatural pressure. Like, it's not normal what I went through at the age of 15. And so you hear a lot of stories of people who do go through a similar thing, they just can't handle it. I probably couldn't handle it, but God gave me strength and his strength to be able to get through it and build upon what happened. So yeah, it's a really big part of my life.
And Ballers and Gods, is it quite nice having that community within football?
Yeah, so I've travelled all over, I guess, around Europe playing football. And my actual church is in Greenwich, my home church is in Greenwich. But being away, you don't, and playing on Saturdays and Sundays, and I can't attend church, and you can't really get plugged into a Christian community. So I realised that other players must be experiencing the same thing. So that's how Ballers and Gods started in 2015. It's a group of footballers who, you know, got this bond of Christianity. We just connect, encourage each other. We meet weekly online. We talk, we laugh, we pray, we study the Bible. We just do life together. And so that's been a real help, to have the fellowship of believers who are in the same field. It's been, yeah, a massive help. Brotherhood.
Now let's look at your career, just looking ahead to the future.
Yeah.
You're still only 26. Yeah. That's the most important thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much more you can do. Where do you want your career to go?
There's still time. Hopefully, I hope to have another decade in the game. I just celebrated my 10th year after making my debut for Palace, so it's gone like that. So I don't really know how quickly the next 10 years is going to go, but I want to play at the highest level possible. You know, it's been a gradual rebuilding, and I've been enjoying the journey, but I don't know what the next step will be. But my goal is to play at the highest level, to keep improving, to, just to play at the highest level. And, you know, I want to come home eventually. Not to say I'm not enjoying it abroad, because I really am. Honestly, I really am. The football, the mindset, the people, it's been great. But as I said before, now I have a little boy, and you start thinking about his future and being settled. It's not comfortable moving a lot. It's been needed. It's been necessary. But next steps, I don't know. I just signed in Bursaspor, so hopefully, you know, really have an impact on the Super League over there. And hopefully the rest will take care of itself.
Let's just talk a little bit about Palace now. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the way Palace have been playing recently and the players we've got?
So at the beginning of the season, I was thinking, wow, because I was at Lons at the start of the season, and we lost our first 7 games. But we scored a couple. Oh, I saw Palace, I think, was it the first 6 you lost?
7,
and there wasn't a goal. Yeah. I was like, wow, what's going to happen here? Because I think, historically, nobody's ever survived after that start. After Hodgson came in and just did what he did, it was just breathtaking. So I've been supporting, I've been rooting the team on, the players. I think the Palace, you know what, it's a really, not just being a fan, but they're such an enjoyable team to watch. Can beat anyone on the day, and got some really exciting players. So I'm excited to see what the coach will build next season, and with the new plans for the new stand and stuff. I think it's exciting times to be a Palace fan.
Do you keep an eye on other players that are in the youth team at the same time as you? Because a very successful period Nathaniel Klein, Victor Moses. Are you keeping an eye on their careers?
Yeah, so I've come across Victor a few times, also Nathan a few times. Sean Scanner, we're in contact now and then. So it's good to see guys who you grew up with just a dream together. I remember just coming to train, I go up to Crystal Palace to train, go to Beckenham to train. And every day you go to train, you think, am I going to make it? Will my dream come true? Like you invest in everything because your school takes a hit, your education takes a hit, friends and family take a hit. So you invest so much in making it. So you question yourself, am I going to make it? And so to have them dreams alongside other players and to, you know, see that they've also, you know, made them dreams come true is, yeah, it's a blessing. It really, really is a great story.
I've just got two final questions. Mm. One's a negative, one's a positive.
Sure. Okay,
we're going to end on the positive.
Good, good, good.
Okay, first, just a negative. What is, in your 10-year career so far, what's your biggest regret so far in your career?
Now, I want to give you a political answer, and you know, when the press and the media, they give you a nice answer. But honestly, the biggest regret, footballing-wise, was leaving Palace. I can say it 100%. I'm not bitter towards anybody in helping that decision come to pass. But if I could go back and make another decision, I would have stayed at Palace, 100%. To be at the club where you grew up, in your area, with that red and blue shirt on is something that only I think now I've left and experienced elsewhere, I appreciate more than I think most other people could ever appreciate because it's home. So that's probably my biggest regret. But the story's not finished yet, I guess.
No, and there's a positive. The positive question, what are you most proud of in your career so far?
I'm most proud in my football career, right?
Yeah.
Of course I'm proud of being the youngest player to play at Palace. Also going to Spurs to duplicate the same record. But I'm most proud of probably where I am now. Not that I would have chosen this in the beginning, but not giving up, being persistent, fighting against all odds to stay in the game, despite different mindsets and different battles I've had to face along the way. Being at where I am now, in a strong position, with all to play for, is probably what I'm most proud of. So, who's to know what's next on my journey? But I'm very proud of, I guess, of never giving up and showing people that, okay, just because it didn't work this way, doesn't mean it can't work this way. So, that's what I'd say.
Thanks, John.
Cool, my pleasure. Thank you.
That was brilliant.
Cheers. Thanks.
So there you go, John Bostock's side of the story finally told. We didn't start putting the piece together for a couple of weeks because I selfishly went on holiday. And then when we did, we hit the jackpot a day before release when the news hit the headlines that John had signed for Toulouse, who already had a pre-season friendly arranged with Palace at Selhurst Park. Perfect. If you listen to this before the 4th of August 2018, you can buy tickets for Bostock's return to Selhurst at tickets.cbfc.co.uk. And if you're listening to this after, then head to eagles.cbfc.co.uk or the official Palace app to watch highlights and all post-match reaction. But until next time, this has been the official Palace pod. Goodbye.